Fun Detour.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Aughty Talk. I can't believe we're on episode 5 already. This is series 1 of Aughty Talk, which is a podcast about autism and people on the autistic spectrum. I'm Louise Crooms, I'm autistic and so are my family members. I'm here to talk about the issues that affect us and have a laugh and have fun at the same time. I think it's really important to raise awareness of autism. It's quite a complicated subject and I feel that people are quite confused in the public. I'm amazed actually about how little people know, despite the fact everyone's heard of autism and people being autistic. So that's what I want to do. I want to raise awareness and I want to get the voice of ordinary people out there talking about their experiences. You might remember Steve from last week. He's on the podcast today to talk more about his job, why he chose it. And he knows quite a famous maths person from a game show called Countdown. And you might know the lady I'm talking about. He's going to mention her. He's going to talk about his issues around friends and what he wants for the future in his life. I've got a new feature this month, which is called Mum's Club. And Andy will be back to be part of Mum's Club. I know he's a dad, but hey, I made the rules so I can break the rules. I will be having a rant about something that annoys me. Jed, the autism specialist nurse, is back and talking about reasonable adjustments in the workplace. This is it, episode 5 of series 1, and it's called Adjustments. Steve is back, who I spoke to last podcast. He found out later in life, in his 60s, that he had autism, and he's still processing what it's like to be on the spectrum and working through it. And I asked him about his friendships in his early years.
I was a member of a little gang like you are, and I had one sort of best mate. But not really. I remember something. I suppose I'd be 14, maybe, and my brother would therefore be 12 and a half, 13. He was in the year behind me in school, and he was getting bullied. And I came home one day and I said to my mum, oh, you know, me and our gang, we went and sorted out these lads who were bullying Pete Large's little brother. And she turned round to me and, again, I can't remember her exact words, but what she was saying was, well, if you can do that for Pete Large's little brother, why can't you do it for your own? And I was heartbroken because I turned to her and what I wanted to say, if I'd had a grown-up vocabulary, what I would have said was, because I'm the lowest status member of the gang, I need to do what everybody else wants me to do in order to remain a member. I'm only there, well, because they can't find a way of getting rid of me. But I am the lowest status member of the gang, and the gang would not do something for me in the same way as they would for Pete, because he was a more charismatic member of the group, and the group would therefore help him. But they wouldn't help me. And my mum's saying to me, and I can see she's desperate and she means it, why can't you do the same for your own little brother? And she had no idea that wasn't possible. She had no idea. She did say something later about how I always kept myself outside of everything. But she didn't realise that I wanted to be on the inside. She thought I kept myself remote. But what it was I tried and failed to join in. I desperately wanted to join in. Today, 63 years old, I really want to join in. I want to be a part of it. I want to be accepted. And I'm not.
Aughty Talk.
Years ago, I was in the Scouts, and for reasons that I absolutely can't remember and don't matter, someone was going to leave our patrol, our little group of scouts, and join another patrol. And I'd been in that patrol for quite some time, several years anyway, which is a lot when you're about 12 or so, which I was. So I was sort of looking down the line because we lined up in order of seniority in the patrol, wondering, you know, presumably last in, first out, so it's the little lad at the end there, and the patrol leader suddenly named me. And that's typical of my social and interactive experiences. It was a shock. I thought I'd done enough to be a member of the patrol in that particular case, or the gang in school, or whatever. But when it came down to it, and you know, circumstances made it so that you actually found out whether you were or not? The answer was that I was not. The friends I had from university, as soon as I got married, I stopped visiting them and I never heard from them again. As soon as I stopped making contact with them, that was it. There was no further contact and those people just disappeared from my lives. My life. Lives? No, I've only had the one so far as I'm aware.
This is Orty Talk.
I don't intend to be arrogant and rude. I know that I appear that way to them. I don't even blame them. You know, there's so many of them, they all understand the same thing. So you can hardly say, well, they're trying to get at me. They're not. But the way that I communicate leads them to understand and believe that I am those things.
Do you think they're right?
No. I think I probably... No, I definitely fail to communicate what I intend to communicate. They listen to what I say and they interpret it as they would interpret it if anybody else had said it. Only I'm autistic. Yeah, my suspicion is that I may never finish it. I'll keep on discovering new things about myself and trying to embrace those.
Would you have liked to have known when you were younger?
I think so, yes. I'd still have made many, many faux pas like we do. That wouldn't have changed. I don't think I could have avoided all that many of them, even if I'd known. But the knowledge would have helped, yeah. It would have helped to explain. It would have helped to make the guilt and the humiliation just a little bit less, because it's not that you're not responsible for your own actions. Everybody is, in my opinion. But that the autism is a contributing thing. You can sort of say, in the sense that, you know, you were born with your right leg slightly withered. So when you're trying to run, you're not all that good about it. Doing it, you can accept that. You know, you don't. Not everybody has to be an Olympic runner, but the fact that you know it's there can help. Like, for instance, if your right leg is weak, you wouldn't probably put your name down for a marathon. But if you didn't know your right leg was weak, and all your mates were putting their names down, you might have put your name down for a marathon. And perhaps somehow you didn't realise that your right leg didn't work like everybody else's, so you wouldn't be able to make it, and you'd be quite bad at running marathons. It's that sort of a thing, because it's an invisible disability. That's a phrase I've come across. Autism is an invisible disability. No one can see it.
And you go around thinking that you're the same as everybody else.
Exactly, yeah. Well, we all do.
Autism talk.
More from Steve very shortly. You're going to hear actually from him about his career and how he invented something that you probably use every day if you're based in the UK. It's time for me to get something off my chest, something that really annoys me. It's time for this.
It's Orty Rant.
I'm just about to leave the house when I remember. Where are my keys? I look in all the obvious places. The kitchen side. No. The dining room table. No. By the door? No. For a horrible moment, I think. I've not left them in the door, have I? No. I've left it to the last minute to leave. I'm late already. I need my keys. For a minute, I think about leaving the door unlatched. No. I need my keys. I think. I need a place for them, a place I always put them in. But of course, when I return back to the house, I'm so relieved to get back. And I forget where I put them. I just lay them down somewhere. I completely don't remember where it is. My handbag. I reach for my handbag. It feels fuller than usual. There's a jangle. My keys must be in here. I search inside. Reach my hand deep into the void. Feel around. Bits of old broken toys. Random pieces of paper. Ugh! Sticky sweet. A jangly thing. Just a pair of bracelets that I put in there. No keys. Where can they be? I'm starting to panic now. I really am going to be late. What was I wearing? My coat. I rush to the coat rack and reach my hand into the first pocket. Nothing. Second pocket? No. Wait, inside pocket? No. Right, I'm really getting panicked now. I hate losing my keys. I'm looking around everywhere. What was I wearing yesterday? Ah, a cardigan. Where was it? So I run upstairs to my bedroom, look everywhere, throwing things all over the place. T-shirts go flying, trousers here, socks there. Wash basket. I rush to it. Reach inside through all the smelly socks and dirty T-shirts. And I find my cardigan. I reach my hand into the pocket expectantly and find nothing. And then I put my hand in the second pocket. My keys! Finally, oh, keys, I'm so pleased to see you. I'm never going to lose you again. Every time I come in, I'm going to remember. Oh, I've only had a hook to put you on. I will do that every day for your keys. I'm never going to let you down. I'm going to remember. Of course I won't. I'll forget. Again, as always. Glad to get that off my chest. Steve is back now to talk about his career, what he invented, and how a teacher helped him in an unusual way.
Left school, went straight to Polytechnic. I only got one of my three A levels, so I went to Polytechnic, was very unhappy there, deliberately failed my exams in order to get away from it, except I failed that as well and had to go back for retakes. But I was quite unhappy. Finished that one, did a year working as a television engineer and retaking my maths A level. My maths teacher, who was the same maths teacher that taught... Her name's disappeared. The countdown lady.
Carol Vorderman.
Carol Vorderman, thank you. About 3 years after he taught me maths, Mr. Parry taught Carol Vorderman maths.
So. That's amazing. Sorry, I'm caught off on Carol Vorderman. Amazing.
Yeah, no, she was in my little sister's class.
Was he a good teacher?
Yes.
It was good for Carol.
At one point he told... Well, remember, countdown's only arithmetic, it's not maths. He told me that I had no chance at all of getting a degree. It was a conversation we were having, and bear in mind that the context is that he has agreed to give me the homework that he was giving to his own sixth form and that he would mark it for me and he wouldn't charge me or anything. He'd just do that for me as a favour. So he had agreed to help me. However, so that's the context. But he said, you haven't got a hope. You're not going to get a degree. You haven't got the stick ability or whatever. And that sort of spurred me on in the way that negative things sometimes do. I sort of took it as a challenge and I did get my degree. But anyway, yeah, he said that to me and it did help. I reminded him of it, actually. I went back to school once, a long time later, and he was still there. And I reminded him of that and he didn't remember saying it. But it had the effect that he'd intended. I truly believe he intended that. I don't think he was being nasty. And I'm very, very grateful to him anyway for agreeing to my work and help me through the A level that I'd screwed up myself in the first time round.
Talk.
After that, I got a job as a TV engineer. I had a basic understanding of electronics by then, which I picked up myself from magazines like Practical Electronics and Wireless World and Practical Wireless and all the rest of them.
I love that Wireless World.
Wireless World. Oh, God, yes, Wireless World. That was a good magazine, that was, Wireless World. Now, I retook my A-level. I passed it. Scraped through, but I passed it and I got into Salford University and did a degree in electronics.
That is great. Congratulations.
And then I left there and got a job as a technical author. That was quite fun.
What's that, please?
A technical author is you buy a bit of kit and there's a pamphlet in there which is effectively an instruction manual. That's written by a technical author. That's what technical authors write, technical material of all kinds. And for me, I actually wrote some stuff. The job was completely, for me, based on what you were writing about. If you were writing about something interesting, it was an interesting job. If you were writing about something tedious, it was a tedious job. And if not all that much later, the microprocessor became a big thing. And a lot of there wouldn't be any electronics hardware design anymore. There'd just be one board with a microprocessor on it, which could then be programmed to do anything. Well, that turned out to be a bit of a pipe dream, but quite a number of us thought that at the time. Certainly I was one of them, and so I shifted into programming and sort of rat jumping off the sinking ship. And I worked in programming for the rest of my working life. I was a much better programmer because I was autistic, because I had certain qualities that are less common in the holistic community. We are that way inclined because there's an extent to which you need to be in order to design programs. It's designing programs is not difficult. It's trivially simple. It's the mindset. If you've got the mindset, you can just do it. And also experience helps. I am talking for more than 30 years experience of doing it. So obviously that helps a lot. Even now, you can't make a phone call in the UK without using my work.
That's quite a claim to fame.
Don't get me wrong, it's without using my work and that of hundreds of other people. But yeah, you can't make a phone call in the UK without using my work.
I know a man who whose dad invented the ironing board, or at least that's what he said. I don't know if it's true or not.
That'd be pretty groovy, I reckon.
Loads of things.
My dad didn't invent the ironing boards. Yeah. he was a pharmacist.
I think the ironing board man might have been joking. I don't know, but I think he did. I think his dad did invent, or his granddad invented the ironing board. Very useful, and also not so useful. You could use a table, but also very useful. So that's fun.
Orty talk.
The final part of Steve's interview is coming up after my new feature, which is Mum's Club, and he's going to tell us about the future that he sees with autism and the help that he would like. Don't forget that Jed is on the way, who's an autism specialist nurse, to talk about reasonable adjustments that you can expect in the workplace. Let's start with the first ever Mum's Club.
Mum's Club.
Andy's here for Mum's Club. This is controversial. We've already started Mum's Club and we have a dad. You're breaking the rules, Andy.
I'm Andy the dad.
Yeah. Andy the dad. When I thought of Mum's Club, it's not just for mums, it's for parents as well. But Parents Club doesn't sound as good.
Mm.
Mum's Club, what I wanted to get across is a sort of mums sitting together and having a chat. Clearly, dads can do that as well.
That's a good thought, that.
That
autistic dads together. I wonder what we'd end up talking about.
Nothing, you sit in silence.
Somehow I'll only talk to people if I know it's kind of safe to talk to them, if they're on the same wavelength.
I call them sympathisers. They're either people who are autistic or people just get it.
Sympathisers.
The sympathisers.
You make them sound like the the French Underground or something.
I don't mean Nazi sympathisisers.
I get it. My daughter said to me a few years ago, why is it? How come you understand me? Oh, no, that was it. She had a bit of a meltdown, that was it. And I can't remember what it was. I really can't remember the incident, and it doesn't matter, but she had a meltdown. And I said, look, I get it. I do get it. She said, you can't get it. You cannot get it. You cannot understand what I'm going through. I said, but I do. I said, I really do. I said, I've been through what you've been through, believe me. All right, he said, yeah, physical differences. You're a girl. I'm now, you know, grown up, I'm your dad. I said, but I've been through things that you've been through. I've had similar struggles to you. I said, back when I was a child, we didn't have... Oh, that was it. I think it was because there was something with the PlayStation. She couldn't get her account to work on the PlayStation.
That's awful when that
happens. Meltdown over that, yeah. And of course, it was my fault. It had to be my fault. So, so back then there was nothing, and she. After a while, if you have an autistic child, sometimes you just there's nothing you can say. You just have to let them simmer down. You have to switch the gas off and let the pot cool, because that. It's unfair to keep on bombarding them with questions or trying to reason with them. And it was resolved. The problem was resolved. And I explained to her, you know, I really do understand it. And then it was about 6 months ago, I think, maybe not even that, when my daughter had an official diagnosis confirmed. And... it was not long after that I decided to go for my diagnosis, or try and get my diagnosis. And yet again, she had another meltdown over something, which I can't remember what it was. And she said, Dad, you can't possibly understand what it's like, me with my autism. And I said, right, first of all, you can't let that be an excuse for everything. I said, you mustn't. I said, but I do know the hardships that you can face. I do know that. And she said, how can you? And so some people may disapprove of this, I don't know. But whatever, I just got my phone out and said, because I do understand. And I showed her the appointment I had with the adult services, and I explained to her that I was going to go through for a diagnosis myself. And ever since that day, we really had a freshened relationship. But for years and years and years, ever since she's been 6, 7, we've had a really good relationship and a really good, solid understanding relationship. It's very... I wouldn't change my daughter for the world. I wouldn't change any of her ways because she's so... We have such a good laugh, so funny. Might be the way I get razzed off over something, and I don't mean it in a nasty way. I might just throw the cushion and say, oh, I've had enough of this. And she will be in pleats of laughter, and then I will be because it's funny and it's so special. But other times when maybe somebody else has cracked the joke, my daughter and I just don't get it. Will not get it. Even now as an adult, there's some jokes I just don't get.
Thank you to Andy as always. And now we're going to have the final part of the interview with Steve, and he's going to tell me about what he wants for the future with help for autistic adults in particular.
Auti Talk.
You've had your diagnosis and you're here thinking about it, going back over your life and going over everything. What do you intend to do next? What is there? Sorry.
I'm tempted to jump in and say death, but I should perhaps try and be a bit more...
I wasn't sort of...
positive than that.
I wasn't sort of making you think about death.
No, I know you weren't. What's next? I don't know. You see, I've retired. That doesn't mean my life is ended by any means.
No.
But I've got no huge ambitions... I've not got... These people who have these lists of things they've got to do before they retire, I don't have such a list.
You don't have a bucket list?
No. No, I don't. I don't want to go to jump off Machu Picchu or whatever it is you do. I'm quite happy. I'm quite content. I don't mind not working. I wish my pension was a bit bigger. No special ambitions. I'm enjoying living my life. So what's next? More of the same, I think.
Do you feel that you're sort of stuck, not really knowing what to do with your diagnosis? How helpful has that been?
The diagnosis alone is not particularly helpful at all. It's just a sort of confirmation of what you already thought.
Is there much out there for adults?
Not that I can find. I could do with a lot more. People who could give you a little bit of advice, not sort of tell you, right, sit down and say, right, you're autistic, you must do this, this and this, but could give you a bit of a clue, sort of, oh, there are things you can do, you know, other than just going over the words you're about to say in your head 6 times and hoping to God that you've taken out anything that could be offensive or that means something you didn't intend. I think we all do that, whether it's conscious or unconscious. But over and above that, there may be things that you can do. There may be simple guidelines or whatever. I don't know. But that advice isn't available, not that I can find.
Do you find you're sort of clawing about on the internet looking for
some
clues?
Yeah, I mean, the only help I've really found is the monthly meetings, Autist Meetup, that I go to every month. And the Twitter autistic community. I'm not on Facebook, but I believe there's an autistic community on there, and I like to hope that they're just as helpful as the ones on Twitter, who are generally speaking pretty good.
I joined a forum online and got thrown out, so I didn't do very well on an autistic forum. Bad communication from me. Everyone hates me. They got rid of me.
Oh, dear.
So I've failed on the online also.
There are... Yeah. Autistic people are all different. We learn that. The first thing you learn when you learn you're autistic is that all the other autistic people, yeah, they do share some things with you, but they're quite different. Some of them are even women, for God's sake. Whoa!
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, whoa.
Some of them are 4 years old, some of them are 63, some of them are women.
Exactly, yes, you just can't tell.
You can't.
Quite a few of them are human, it turns out.
And some of them are programmers.
Yeah, indeed.
Even stranger.
Orty talk.
You can't make generalisations because they don't apply.
That makes it more confusing, though, doesn't it? Because you're looking at things you're saying.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not autistic because this person's saying this.
If you could just say, well, look at him, he's red, that would be nice and easy. You could sort of look at him and say, look, yeah, he's definitely red. There's definite tinge of red there. Are we all agreed? Yeah, red, fine. Autistic, much more difficult. Well, invisible, so you can't see it like you can see red, but also much more complicated and a much more vague thing. Vaguer. I tried to explain to someone recently, and bear in mind these are made-up numbers, I said, it's like there's a list of 500 symptoms, and if you have 200 of them, any 200 of them, you're autistic. That's the sort of way it works. And what you can understand from that is there are many, many thousand, million, billion ways of extracting 200 from 500. You know what I mean? You can have lots of autists with lots of slightly different variations on the same theme.
The permutations. We aren't,
the permutations. That's, if you want to get mathematical about it, yes, permutations
can't
is what you're talking
I just said
about.
That.
And I can't remember how to work them out in my head anymore, so I can't do it for you. But and besides, I made up the 200 and the 500 in the first place. But it's like that. It's vague. You know, not every autist will have this one thing. Nearly all of us, as far as I can tell, have communication issues. Even those aren't always the same.
No, we're doing maths on numbers that aren't real. You do realise. It's good.
Yes, absolutely. Can't beat it.
It's a good way of doing stuff, absolutely.
Mm, you are.
Do you tell people?
Some, depends. I haven't shouted too much about it.
What's the response been like?
I've chosen the people I've told quite carefully, so the response has been positive or indifferent, which is okay too.
A lot of indifference, yeah.
One, my closest long-term friend just said, yeah, things that are true feel right and that feels right. And that's all he said.
Party talk.
Thank you to Steve, who's been absolutely brilliant again. He's an absolute star, and for chatting about his feelings here on Orty Talk. It's now time for our favourite autism specialist nurse.
It's Jed.
What help is there out there for adults in particular?
I suppose it's really limited in most places, to be perfectly honest. In theory, a diagnosis of autism means you can ask for a community care assessment. From social services, but most people we meet wouldn't probably meet their criteria, or don't actually need that sort of support. A lot of people we meet don't need support to sort of attend to the daily living, you know, which is what mainly community care assessments are about. I think some people find the most useful thing is actually sort of online groups and online forums and sort of learning about autism and other autistic people going on their own sort of journey. We do run groups for autistic people, which isn't what everyone wants to come to. And it's not that I think autistic people should only go together and hang out in one group. But
if you could just stay over there in that corner, that'd be great.
But it can be nice to meet other people sometimes who've had similar experiences. Sometimes people come to that group if they're thinking about referring, because they're thinking about referring and they're not quite sure. And they'd like to meet a few different people who've had a diagnosis and think, well, I'm a bit like that person. I'm nothing like that person. Could I be autistic? The way to sort of challenge your own stereotypes is to meet autistic people. But it's limited support. I think there's a better understanding, but still, you know, if you've got a learning disability, there's a team for learning disabilities in every borough. If you've got mental health issues, there's teams for people with mental health issues. But autism isn't either of those. So even though you might have a learning disability as well, or you might be more likely to have a mental health condition because life's hard enough anyway, so if you're autistic, I think life's slightly more challenging. But there's no support unless you've got a mental health condition. And therefore, sort of, it's always been seen as like a Cinderella kind of service. Boroughs don't have to have the same amount of autistic specialists in each area, so there's never I would really like there to be like a national standard. In every borough, you need to have this type of worker, this number of workers, depending on how many people live in your area. And there isn't that at the moment. So it just depends on each area. And sometimes it's just, you might happen to live in a place where there's a really good support group that's run by autistic adults, maybe, or that's been set up by people that have a real good interest in autism. Some people might just happen to have a really good workplace where they've got the diagnosis and they can get really good reasonable adjustments. Sometimes workplaces aren't great at that.
Tell me about reasonable adjustments. What are they?
So under the Equalities Act, you can ask for a reasonable adjustment if you have any condition or disorder or disability, which autism would come under one of those. And in theory, you can ask for reasonable adjustments anywhere. So it can be at your workplace or in education. It could be going to the doctor. It could be, according to the law, going to a working man's club for some reason. That's always mentioned. That's quite an obscure one.
Excuse me.
But there are times when it can be really useful. So if somebody's had a diagnosis of autism and they're working somewhere, there's something that's making their work life really challenging and it's related to their autism. Quite often, before the diagnosis, workplaces won't make any amendments. And usually it's something that costs nothing. It could be something as simple as, can I sit in a different place where I'm not sat under the brightest light in the office, or I'm not sat under the fire alarm? Or if we work shifts, could you not change my shift pattern without a certain amount of days' notice? Because to that person, changing a shift pattern could cause anxiety the day before, the day of the change, the day after. Whereas it was me, it might just annoy me a little bit. So it's not about treating people in a sort of special way. It's giving people the same chance as everyone else to be successful.
Absolutely. We're not so, you know, if someone has a difficulty walking or they're in a wheelchair, we don't say, never mind, up the steps, you know. No. You make adjustments accordingly. But I don't think people do to the certain degree as autism. My experience has been that people see it as very much a personality thing, or, I don't have to have that choice, or I don't, why should you get that when I get this? I guess it's a lack of understanding. Do you think the public has a good understanding of what autism is?
I think it's really, really hit and miss. So like I said, I know some people that have gone into work and the manager seems to have a brilliant understanding, or might just be a really nice person. It might not be that they've got a great understanding of autism, it might just be a good person that wants to help people. And I suppose you're an employer. If you can set something up so it suits your employees better, they're going to work better anyway. So I think it really depends. I think it depends how many people each member of society has met that's autistic, or if they've done research, but not research in terms of reading a book, research in terms of looking at YouTube clips by autistic people, or they've just watched episodes of shows where they've been realistic autistic people, which isn't always the case. I think it's a bit hit and miss. I think it's getting better because there's more and more people, you know, people like Chris Packham and people like that who have had a diagnosis. They're not famous because they're autistic. The kind of people that, especially my generation, were growing up knowing. And he might have confounded a few people's stereotypes. Because some people would never have thought that somebody that was a successful TV presenter could be autistic, which obviously there's probably loads of successful TV presenters.
There probably is. Have you found that there's been an uptake in diagnosis since Chris Packham was very vocal about his own diagnosis?
I think there was. Sometimes there's certain programmes on TV and we get a bit of a peak, but not straight away, usually a few weeks after. I think sometimes something like that, people don't often, I think, watch it and go, right, I'm going to go and seek a diagnosis, but it might be the seed that's sown. Sometimes people, when they come to us originally, say somebody mentioned autism 3 or 4 years ago and I thought about it and then I was too busy leading my life to worry about it, or a few other people mentioned it, or I saw something on telly that I could relate to, or I went on a training course and it was about autism and I could relate to the person that was doing the training. So sometimes it's a bit more of a, not so much a light bulb moment as the seed to sown, and then a few months, a few weeks or a few years later, somebody then might start looking to get a diagnosis.
It's almost like looking through a tapestry. You're going, oh, there's a thread here. And then there's a little bit more of a thread, and then you look at that and suddenly the seed is growing and it's weaving through your life and you sort of see it. One thing that I struggled with at work was that we had an automatic light that came on, and it was right above my eye line, and lots of really helpful people in my work used to cover the sensor up to actually stop it coming on, because it was so blinding and so awful. And I was told so often by people that it was a health and safety issue. The reason they had it there was because people didn't switch the light off at night, so it might have stayed on overnight, and they didn't want that to happen. So if there was a sensor, they could rely on that the sensor would set it off. But then you had no control over the light, so even if it was quite bright, you had to have the light on. It was almost like torture by light. The light had to be on. And it took about a year for someone to fit me a light switch. But that day when I was able to press the light, and if you sort of say, look, I can't stand this light. And what was interesting is so many people at work hated the light as well. Some people who may have had some sensory issues themselves and not realised. Some people who just didn't want the light on, you know, there was lots of different reasons, but they still wouldn't switch this light off. And if you asked them to switch it off, they sort of said, oh, you're being unreasonable asking for this light off. And then once we get our light switch and we were able to switch it off, I think it benefited so many people. I think anyone once said, oh, I really miss the fact that the light used to switch on without me having any control over it.
No, I can see why it's frustrating that somebody needs something, a reasonable adjustment, but they can't have it until they've met a certain person who's got a certain qualification, because you need that light turned off regardless of whether someone had written a big diagnosis about you. You just need the light off. And also, like you said, I can't think of anything that's autism friendly that isn't just people friendly.
Is it all sensorially based that people are looking for, or are there any other things that would be helpful?
Within the workplace, I suppose other things that people commonly ask for is things like, if there's a team meeting, a lot of autistic people find that a bit challenging to keep up, because there's like five different people, different conversations. It's really hard to filter all that out. Can I meet with somebody afterwards just to make sure I've understood what was said there, so I don't go off on a tangent and do something wrong? Sometimes it's just having possibly the manager understand that I'm autistic, so I've got a bit of a literal interpretation of language. So if you want me to do something, don't like be really ambiguous and drop loads of subtle hints. Tell me what I need to do and I'll go and do it. Probably better than most of the people. But if you just give me a little suggestion, I'm going to get a bit lost. And some people, especially if they've not had a diagnosis yet, will get frustrated because they're constantly having to ask people at work to clarify things. And people at work don't understand that it's not that they're being pedantic, it's just the way you've worded it could mean one of two or three different things. Please spell it out to me. It would make my life better. I'll be better at my job. But also, you won't have to tell me three times if you do it right the first time.
I had that at university. I would say to the teacher, oh, can I just ask about this? And then in the end, he went completely mad and went, what do you think I mean, Louise? I was like, I don't know, this is why I'm asking. It does feel like you can be the opposite way around as well. Like what I do now is, because I did used to ask a lot of questions, now I don't ask anything and I fudge everything. So I pretend I know what I'm doing in all scenarios. And then sometimes I go around to people and I say, would it be reasonable to ask about this? Would a normal, you know, I hate to use the word normal, but would a regular person ask, am I meant to know this? And sometimes they say, no, you weren't meant to know it, you should have asked. So it's once you've got sort of burnt for asking too many questions almost, you sort of go the opposite way and then just spend your life just pretending you know what you're doing, which more or less sums me up.
Party talk.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Auti Talk. It's been brilliant to have you here. Thanks to everyone who's spoken on the podcast, Andy, Steve and Jed, for being brilliant and honest and very helpful. It's been great to have you guys. Thanks so much. I can't believe it's going to be the last episode of Series 1 next month. It's Episode 6, the final one in Series 1. That's coming up, and Andy actually has a bit of a revelation to tell you, so an update from Andy next week. More from Jed, and we're going to be talking to Jo, who we spoke to very briefly. We heard her ideas about buses on Episode 1, and she's back with a full interview on Episode 6, the final one, to talk about gender, so that'll be the name of that. If you want to find out more, you can have a look on my website, autitalk.com, and please review and share far and wide if you've enjoyed this podcast. Thank you.